listening to Tim.
Relax. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This program is called The Burrow. My name is Andy Resto, and today is going to be an episode centered around Margaret Chartier, aka Pharmacon, who was in town this weekend on Saturday at the Fox Cabaret. A wonderful, wonderful show. And I had the privilege of doing an interview with Margaret beforehand. And therefore, I'm going to just go ahead and play that interview today. It's about 35 minutes long or so. Mix some songs in there in between. Should get us through the hour. So, without further ado, here you go. This is my interview with Pharmacon here on The Burrow, CITR 101.9 FM.
February 21st, here at the Fox, behind an old screen, a movie screen. Fox Theater, of course, used to be a famous porn theater here in Vancouver, so interesting setting. Here with Margaret Chartier, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah.
AKA Pharmacon, about to play here in a couple hours or so. Thank you for joining me.
Sure.
How's everything going? The tour winding up?
Well, it's winding down. So
winding down,
it's
yeah.
Maybe like 5.5 weeks in of a 6.5 week tour.
Great. That's been...
It's a long one.
And
so over a month.
Is that, yeah, is that winding down, is that a relief or is it...
No.
No? Are you, you enjoy yourself then while you're...
Yeah. Enjoy is a funny word.
All right.
But,
okay.
Returning to New York City where it's -7 degrees and snowing.
Right, okay.
And also where I'm not on tour. I don't know. Being on tour is like going under Stockholm Syndrome, where like after a certain point you never want, like even though you're enduring all sorts of miseries and hardships,
right.
You kind of like don't, you like it. You
yeah,
don't want to leave,
exactly.
You know. Never
great.
Want to end.
Cool, so it's kind of where I wanted to start. With the idea of New York growing up there, maybe the myth around, you're very young,
mm-hmm.
And doing the music that you do, kind of could say that you're a prodigy, I guess. I was kind of wondering what the inspiration was, I guess, growing up for leading to you making noise music and things of that nature.
Well, I guess the inspiration was just, like, discovering it in the first place. I think that there's this phenomenon that, like, most people end up getting really into noise always end up making a project, just like most kids who get into punk end up being in a punk band at some point. It's the same sort of ideal where it's like once you find this voice, you want to speak through that voice, you know? And I found out about it when I was like 16 and had the privilege to be in New York City, which was the home of Fun Fest and Hospital Productions, the record store, the physical store, when it was still in existence, and sort of like in a time, like, you know, that was 2006, which is like right when there was sort of a big pulse of energy in noise and industrial. And so, like, it was this, like, perfect storm where I found out about it through one of my sister's ex-boyfriends, actually. And as soon as I knew about the hospital store, and I just went in there and I just dove into their entire stock. And as soon as I started listening to it, I had to make it, because I'd found, like, the thing that... I'd found my voice. I'd found the thing that was not just music. It wasn't just art. It was something more than both of those to me.
And do you feel that New York City, I guess, would be more of a welcoming place for that? Like, say, if you grew up in a different city, do you think it would have been as, I won't say easy, that's probably not the right word, but as much of a welcoming scene to jump into?
I think the term, like, welcoming scene is probably pretty misleading.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it wasn't it, like, I, for a while, I when I was first getting into it, I didn't have any friends that listened to it.
Mm-hmm.
Until I met, like, sort of the Yellow Tears guys and the crew that would end up becoming, like, the Red Light District, which was, like, a house I used to live at where we had shows. And all of us had, like, a bunch of bands together and stuff. But it was, like, a year before I found those kids. And until then, it was a lot of me just going to shows by myself at, like, you know, with a fake ID, just, like, standing in the corner really nervous and sort of trying not to look too out of place. You know, just experiencing these things completely alone and, like, not having anyone to discuss it with or be in a band with or anything. I mean, I think that's probably why it's like a solo project, is because for the first year that I was listening to this music, like, I didn't know anyone that was into it, and so I only had myself, so I just thought, well, I'll just make it by myself, you know. So it wasn't like a welcoming scene, but it was a scene that was sort of like thriving. There was a lot of energy surrounding it, like, but I wouldn't really find that until like a little later.
Right. So 2013 is when Abandon comes out, I guess. And that's on Sacred Bones. So how is it that you got connected with Sacred Bones Records and found a way to put out this album?
Well, they were... So before they were Sacred Bones Records, to me, they were just Caleb and Taylor. They were people that I knew through mutual friends. And then I would meet them through a completely separate group of friends, and then through another completely separate group of friends and of whom knew each other. They just sort of kept popping up in my life at shows, and they were really supportive and coming to shows, and just sort of became friends with them and started realizing that a lot of the people that I was around were in some way involved with them, and then sort of had this like extreme changing point in my life where everything that my life was based around just totally crumbled. Like, the carpet was just pulled out from under my feet. I, you know, didn't have a home, I didn't have a job, I didn't, all the people that I'd been working with creatively and people who had been my friends, I didn't have that anymore. And while I was homeless, I went on tour with Cult of Youth, who's a Sacred Bones band, and I was only supposed to go with them for 4 days, but when they found out that I didn't have a place to live, they were like, why don't you just come on the whole tour? I mean, what are you going back to anyway, you know? And so I said, oh, fuck it, and I just went on tour with them the whole time. And then when I came back, Sacred Bones was like, do you want to put out a record? And I was like, you know what, my entire life is completely topsy-turvy, I have no idea what's going on, I've never done anything like this, but like, I'm ready to push myself outside of my comfort zone and just like you know. I mean, like, when you're starting completely from scratch and you have no semblance of, like, what your life was before, and something sort of radical like that presents itself to you, it makes sense, you know, because it's, okay, here we go, you know. So it just kind of came at this really serendipitous time.
Yeah.
Made sense.
Yeah. And so, kind of in the wake of that, the next thing that I know, you did a Nancy Sinatra cover on a Sacred Bones called Bang Bang.
So. Yeah.
And a lot of people are, I guess, outside of your circle look at that and are a bit shocked. And even the sound of, like, your voice on the track and stuff is very different. Is that an actual influence you have, Nancy Sinatra, on music like that? Or is it... Yeah, so can you tell me a little bit about that?
I mean, so, like, that song specifically is a song that is completely deconstructed, right? It's just the guitar and her voice, and yet it's, like, so haunting, and so the original is so emotionally, like, churning. And obviously that kind of, like, deconstructed aesthetic is something I've always been really interested in. And as much as I know that it was, like, a totally bizarre thing for me to do, it's something that I've always wanted to do just as me, as Margaret, you know? And I didn't think that there was, like, ever going to be an appropriate avenue to do that. And they were like, oh, you want to put something on a comp? And I thought, well, I've always wanted to do this, and it can't exist anywhere else, so I might as well just go for it. And I think that, like, if you have a natural inclination as an artist, you should follow it, regardless of other people's expectations. If you do what other people expect you to do all the time, you're failing. It's boring. It's not... That's not experimental. People say, oh, you did a pop song. Like, but that's, like, probably the most experimental thing I've ever done,
right,
because it's the most completely, like, non-typical, unexpected.
Yeah.
I've never done anything like that, so I was just pushing myself to see, like, you know, I have this, like, weird affinity for the song. It's very haunting to me. Something about it resonates with, like, my psyche and, like, my music in this weird way. And I understand that. Probably nobody else does. But, like, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to push myself and, like, see if I can. And that's probably the most experimental thing.
Now he's gone.
I don't know why, and to this day sometimes I cry. He didn't even say goodbye. He didn't take the time to lie. Bang, bang, he shot me down. Bang, bang, I hit the ground. Bang, bang, that awful sound. Bang, bang. My baby shot me down.
I'm reminded there's a lyric in a song that says the conventional is now experimental.
Yeah.
And I always think about that. It's very, a lot of times it's very true. Right?
Which, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Because, like, if you think about what that term actually means, it means, you know, art that is a result of experimenting. Experimenting is, you know, doing things in a not formulaic way. If you do the same thing over and over again, no matter how, you know, quote unquote, brutal it is, that becomes a structure. And as soon as something becomes a structure, you have to break it down. You have to check yourself, because then you're just, you know, you're just reiterating something. It has to be pure and in the moment, and it has to be hard for you.
Yeah,
you have to push yourself.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of what I've thought about when listening to your music and things like that. It's there's a criticism that can come in, but that I've heard even from people I've shown it to, like, oh,
yeah,
check this out or something, where they just hear it and think it's, you know, shocking for the state of shock, you know, or for the sake of shock, and it's just which is very frustrating to hear. But it's more about if you're doing it in a genuine manner, then it's almost the only way that you can make your music is you have to create, in a way, a new lexicon, or your lexicon for the music. And so it isn't the fact that it's harsh noise, or the fact that it's a punk band that you start, or whatever.
Right.
It's the fact that you're doing something in your own avenue.
I think that's like the most important thing, is you would hope that, like, music, anyone's music, if it's, like, means something to them, that it's not about a genre study. It's not about fitting into the tropes of some musical genre. It should be about, you know, that personal expression, not about, like, fitting in. That's exactly the opposite of what noise should be. And people who aren't familiar with noise might hear it and say, oh, it's shocking for shocking's sake. But they don't realize that, first of all, I tend to find that people who have that kind of reaction, it's because they want something to be easily digestible, like, really quickly, and they're not willing to, like, see. So, like, they hear something that sounds loud or is, you know, to them shocking, which they're probably pretty boring if they find that shocking, and then they can't look past it, so they say, oh, it's a loud sound, therefore that's the point. No, that's not the point. If you read the lyrics, if you, like, allowed yourself to experience it, you know, there's more to it than that, and it's not shocking for shocking's sake. In fact, I don't think it's shocking. That's the whole point.
Right.
Is that it's not shocking. The point is that it's not supposed to be. Is that, like, you know, these are, like, harsh truths that are part of the human experience. And if you can't look at, like, a set of organs, if you can't face your own mortality, like, that's not my fault that you find that shocking. Because that's just, like, should be pretty present in people's minds. It's a part of life. It's not shocking. It's the only thing for certain that we know. So it's actually the opposite of shocking. It's kind of, like, just inherent.
Obvious truth.
It's obvious, yeah. It's, you know, it's, like, the one thing that all humans have in common and can agree upon, or, like, compromises the human experience. So why is that shocking?
Great. That's what I was hoping to hear.
Yeah.
Before we talk about the new album, a few months old, I guess, now, but new album. I wanted to, you mentioned organs, looking at bodily organs. I wanted to just talk about the album covers. I think they're fantastic, and it's a combo of two things. So I think Sacred Bones already has the most beautiful album covers, the way they design it just as a label for all the artists with the track listings and things like that. And then the two covers for Abandoned and Bestial Burden are, I think, fantastic.
Thank you.
And I was wondering, are you the, do you design the covers
definitely.
And think of the whole concept?
Yeah. Yeah, it's completely, like, both of the covers, like, the images came into my head around the same time as the title, because they're so conceptually tied in with, like, the themes and thematic elements and the lyrics. I like, sort of sketched them out and thought of them in my head, and then got all the supplies, and in both of the photos it's me, because I wouldn't make anyone else do either of those things ever. And my sister, who's like the only person I would trust to take those photographs, you know, I would sit down with her and sort of draw it out and say, like, oh, this is kind of the cropping that I want, and this is what it's supposed to look like. And she is incredibly talented and understands me and, you know, what I'm communicating to her, so. And I know nothing about photography, so, like, I have the image in my head, and I know how to, like, physically recreate it in person, but then, like, how you capture that, I have apps, I'm completely ignorant, so my sister, Jane, helps me in, like, making it a reality.
Great. And I assume real maggots on the cover?
Real, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it's... That's what makes it good, I guess.
If you told me they were fake, I'd be a little bit disappointed.
First of all, where do you get fake maggots?
Well, you could probably find them.
No, I got 1,000. There's 1,000 maggots. It was 5 tubs of 200 each. They're in sawdust.
Where do you get those?
Petland
That's
discount.
A weird thing, I guess. Really? Okay.
Yeah, dude, iguanas eat them, you know?
Yeah.
I guess, apparently. But they come in, like, sawdust. So you have to... I had to pick them all out one by one with, like, tweezers in my fingers from the sawdust and... put them all in another bowl. Like, they're real.
Yeah.
The sound they make is fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
We had to, like, blast music while we were doing that shoot, because the sound they all make when they're crawling on top of each other is like
yeah.
And it's like, it's loud. I, like, didn't expect that at all. And we had to do the shoot really quickly, because they were all crawling away.
They're
much faster than you would think they are.
They, like, nibble and stuff too, don't they?
They didn't nibble me, but they just really didn't want to be in that scene at all. You know, there's, like, hot lights on them, and, you know, they're not in their sawdust, so they're, like, their moisture is getting all, they're all getting stuck to each other.
Yeah.
So they're all trying to, like, crawl away really fast. Like, it was, like, we had to really just do it quickly. It was bizarre. Second time, I was like, at least this time, with the organs, like, it's already dead.
Yeah.
You know, they're not moving. They're, like, kind of melting a little and sliding off, but it's easier to deal with.
You should have recorded all the maggot noises.
You know what's really crazy? I, like, wanted to, but I was covered in maggots. Like, I couldn't move. Like,
yeah.
You know? So there was nothing to do about it.
Could we take 20 minutes? I'll just sit here and you guys can just record
this.
No, we
couldn't take 20 minutes, because they were, like, honestly, the whole shoot happened in, like, less than 20 minutes, because they were so fucking fast.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know if you're allowed to curse on the radio.
That's all right. Well,
sorry,
editor. We can take that. That's
I'm right. A pirate now. No, they move really fast. Hard to wrangle them.
So it's a pretty relatively quick turnaround between the two albums, 1 year's time or so. The story around the second album, I'm sure we've gone over 100 times, but it's an interesting story. And I don't know how much being on the outside is kind of a myth and how much is the truth of it. But the concept is, when you listen to the album, it's very obvious. And, and I think that's part of what makes the album great. It's a very conceptually unique album and executed very well.
Thank you.
And I don't know if you wanted to touch on any of that briefly, or the situation surrounding it.
Well, the situation surrounding it and the thematic elements are completely tied in with one another. I mean, basically what happened was, I was supposed to go on this European tour, which was, like, almost 2 months. Insane. It was, like, my first, you know, real European tour course I was nervous and excited and everything. But 4 days before I was supposed to leave, I woke up and I tried to get out of bed and I just literally fell on the ground and I couldn't speak, I couldn't scream, I couldn't cry. I was in the most excruciating pain I've ever felt in my entire life. It was, my first thought was that I was like dying, but I like, maybe my appendix burst. I didn't know what was going on. It was like really brutal. And eventually I got it together enough to call my roommate, brought me to the hospital. And it turns out that I had a cyst, which was about the size of like a bigger orange. And it collapsed one of my organs, which was my ovary, I'll just say. So it was torsion, which means that it twists the organ around itself. And it happened, it was three times, triple torsion. So it just cut off all the blood supply, so all of that matter of the cyst and everything is floating around, and the blood's cut off, and so it was, like, a very, like, immediate situation. They ended up just having to take not just the cyst, but the organ out completely, and so that required 3 incisions across my abdomen, one through my belly button. Like, I have a fake belly button now. It's not a real belly button. Like, they opened it up, and then they sutured it back in, and it's, like, it's a different shape now. And 2 other incisions. And, you know, of course, like, maybe some people don't realize how much every single movement that we do requires that, you know, area of our body across the stomach. So the recovery was, like, pretty screwed up. I was just in, you know, pissing blood, and I couldn't move, and I was stuck in bed for like 3 weeks. I had to cancel half the tour. I probably, to be honest, should not have gone on the second half of the tour. I think that that was a really, really risky thing, but I felt like I had to do it. I didn't want to be defeated entirely by this thing that happened that was completely out of my control. It felt, you know, wrong. So I went anyway. I ended up popping a stitch at one of the shows, of course, and just did it. But the whole time I'm like sitting in bed, but my brain is on tour. Like, I'm supposed to be somewhere else. I'm supposed to be experiencing this, like, my first European tour, which, like, that's pretty huge. Yeah, it's like, yeah. You know, I was so excited, and it just got smacked down. And I just felt betrayed by this sack of meat for the first time. I had thought about the funny thing is I had thought about these concepts before and was already sort of working on some of the ideas, and in a way it almost felt like I brought it on myself because of thinking of these ideas, this thing happened, you know, to make it real and tangible. So that's kind of freaky, but I felt like I was, my self was split into 2 and I was stuck inside of this human vessel. When in reality, my consciousness existed completely outside of the body. It didn't, suddenly the two didn't seem to make sense to coexist. And I felt that human as the animal had won over human as the human. And that separation was just so brutal and harrowing and just sort of like, I was just stuck. And it just felt like the most claustrophobic thing. Because then I also, like, of course, upon that realization is I'm stuck inside of this thing forever until I die, and it kills my consciousness. When it dies, me as a consciousness, as a conscious living being, I also die, which obviously I figured out when I was like 4 years old, but, you know, it's that sort of like that sudden feeling of being stuck inside of it, like being completely disconnected, having yourself split into 2, being this being that was, you know, mentally fully functional, but physically just a blob stuck in a bed for 3 weeks. And so while I was stuck there, I just started writing a lot about these weird sort of feelings I was having, writing those ruminations came into lyrics, and the ideas for the sounds and then the album title and the cover all came while I was just like in bed stuck.
When I listen to it, I guess these are, you don't have to reveal these things if you don't want to. The way it's split into 2 halves is why I think it almost doesn't work. I find it almost difficult to listen to the tracks separately, because it works just as one piece almost, or at least two halves.
A and B.
Yeah, exactly.
On vinyl, not on
of course, yeah. first half, it seems like there's vacuum to start it, where you're kind of hyperventilating, and then there's like this heartbeat throughout the entire next two songs, is the way I see it. And it almost seems like, you know, you go through the first track, then you're trying to remain calm with this heartbeat the entire time, and it's kind of dragging you out of it as you go inside the culmination of Body Betrays Itself and stuff. And the second half, I see it, there's like the ringing the entire time, like this pounding headache or something that then again spirals out of control as the final track ends. And I'll get to the final track again, but I didn't know if you wanted to touch on any of that, if any of that is part of what you were thinking. Or?
I'm really glad that you picked up on that, because like that is the intention. It's like supposed that those sounds are supposed to be of the body. It is supposed to be, you know, it is composed as like A side and B side. Of course, they're all one full piece together, but they're supposed to kind of feel a little separate. So through the A side, you have what you call the heartbeat that pounding is happening the entire time, and then through the B side, that ringing in the ears and the head, that migraine is going throughout the entire B side, and that's the body, the physical self, and the consciousness in the brain, the ringing in the ears, you know. And that's it. Yeah, you nailed it on the head.
Thank you. final track, and this goes into a question about all of your music, I guess. There's a lot of a surprising amount, I guess. Again, we were talking about this earlier with the fact that you're in this hard, quote-unquote, harsh noise genre,
right.
So you can easily be cornered in that and its limitations and what you can actually do with just noise.
Right.
The vocal range you have is very impressive, both in a band, and you use a lot of different styles in the vocals and different effects on vocals. And then on Bestial Bird, and also it changes throughout the album. The last track, I almost feel, and I don't know if this is it, but when I listen to it this time, I feel that it's almost ironic or a mocking tone that you have throughout it as you're saying these lyrics. And then you get into this manic laughter almost,
right,
at the end of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Yeah.
Or just overall the different vocal effects you use. And
Specifically with that last song, it is a mocking tone. It ends in laughter. But of course it's not laughter as amusement and pleasure. It's that nervous laughter that you get when you realize that it's meaningless. It's so, like, one of the things that's repeated is, I don't belong here, and that, you know, I'm in the hands of nothing, and then the word nothing is repeated. So it's the sense of being, you know, once again tied to this bag of flesh that's just decaying, failing, and just the idea of, like, you know, the end of a record is supposed to sort of be not just the culmination, but it's supposed to be a peace of mind, right? I didn't want that, because the record is not about coming to peace with these things.
Right.
It's about exactly the opposite. It's about not being at peace with them. The record has no resolution. It doesn't end in, but that's a human experience, so there you go, kids. No, it's like, this fucking sucks. Sorry, again, for cursing. This is horrible. I'm not okay. I still am not okay with this. I still feel it's the sense of injustice, just that, like, the fact that the human animal was given the blessing or the curse of the knowledge of its own mortality. It was given that forbidden fruit from the tree of knowledge. We were just screwed as a species. We're not supposed to know these things. You know, no other animal knows those things. And that, like, laughter and that mocking tone is just the sort of, what does this record mean? What does this drop in the bucket when the end, we still die in the end. All of us die in the end. Everyone who ever listened to this record dies at the end. I die at the end. I stop. My body stops. So that laughter is nervous laughter. It's the laughter of defeat, not of, like, amusement.
Great. So moving on from that, is there, like I said before, pretty quick turnaround with this album. Although it seems that with the records, there are pretty strong influences on the background of you writing the records. And obviously you find inspiration in your own life experiences. And if there's anything that's coming on the horizon, or if you don't think about those kind of things of what's next for Pharmakon, or if there's, you know, if there's something outside of Pharmakon that's next, and if you have any ideas of what the future might hold.
Well, I'm already working on new material. I'm essentially completely, like, redoing the way in which I make music. I'm inventing a lot of weird processes and instruments that don't exist yet that I have to, like, kind of build myself and just figure out. So it's going to be a longer process than the last two, I'm sure. But I think that, like, for the first time in a while, there's no sort of immediate outside forces weighing down on me. So I have the time to, like, develop ideas that I've had for a while, that the last two records came as sort of a pressing creative urge that I had something I needed to do to work through creatively. And this next thing that I'm working on is a little more patient. I have more time, I think, to kind of, like, develop ideas that are longer, overarching ideas, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah.
I'm also, like, going to be doing a lot of stuff outside of PharmaCon for the first time in a couple years. Yeah. Like, I'm playing guitar in a, like, punk band, and probably doing a lot of collaborations with people that I've wanted to work with for a long time.
Great.
So,
yeah. That's exciting. All right. The name, PharmaCon. I wanted to ask this earlier, and it just popped in my head again.
Yeah.
PharmaCon, Remedy, and Poison, mm-hmm. right? Derrida by way of Sophocles. By way of Aristotle, yes. Is there a reason you came upon that? Is there an obsession with old philosophy that you have, or is it that it fits, the term fits for what you were doing? Are there...
It's sort of both. I like... when I had the project, I was going through old journals because I was writing lyrics and sort of bringing things from different things. And there was this, like, one page that just said PharmaCon. And there was nothing else written on the page. And I had no recollection of writing it down. I didn't know the meaning. And it struck me, and I thought, that's weird. And then I looked it up, and it was, like, all of the ideas that I had been thinking, like, this is what this project is about, and this is, like, why I'm making this. And it was so encompassing of that. And it just seemed like such a serendipitous event, so I had to stick with it. But it's mostly about, like, sort of this idea. It's both the function that the project plays in my life, the subject matter of it, and what I see as its function.
Leave it at that.
Yeah.
So we are at the Fox Cabaret, a converted porn theater, for your show tonight. Just wanted to know, just a lighter question, along your travels on tour, some highlight venues, are there any weird stories that you want to share, any strange venues like this that...
This is probably the one with, like, the coolest history that I can think of off the top of my head. I like the idea of a space sort of continuing a resonance throughout all of its different uses throughout the years, and I think the fact that it was, like, a porn theater, and before that I think it was just, like, an independent theater or something, and that now it's, like, a music venue. I like that idea a lot. I'm trying to think of, like, the weirdest... One of my favorite venues is another Canadian venue in Toronto called CBGB's. Like, shitty CBGB's.
Yeah.
Like, you know. That place is always great. I don't know. Honestly, I've been on tour for, like, 5.5 weeks, and I think if I sat down and I looked at the entire, like, tour itinerary, I could just tell you, like, toes. And there was the one night where the girl was pretty much having sex on stage while I was playing, and she was rubbing her head back and forth on the floor of the stage and sort of gyrating against the sub speaker. There was last night when I ended up having to do a little tumble with one of the audience members about three or four times attached. There have been, like, I mean, just, like, there's countless stories, but as far as venues, this is probably, I can't think of any others with, like, an interesting history.
Alright, well, I'd say it's pretty much good wrapping up here. Thank you so much for joining me.
It's
really appreciated it. Do you have any last words you want to say? Anything you want to get out there to people of Vancouver or to any listeners that there might be?
That the raw, honest response is usually the most truthful.
Great. Thanks so much, Margaret.
Thank you.
Hope you have a good show tonight, and good luck with whatever the future might hold for PharmaCon.
Thank you.
Et cetera, I'll say.
Get ready for the 2015 Metro Vancouver Transportation and Transit Plebiscite. You must be on the provincial voters list to get a vote-by-mail voting package. Register to vote or make sure your voter registration is up to date now at elections.bc.ca/OVR or call 1-800-661-8683. That's 1-800-661-8683. This message is brought to you by Elections BC.
Attention grad students, share your research, find out what's going on in other disciplines, approach your work from a new angle. Check out Fire Talks, the interdisciplinary discussion forum sponsored by the Research Commons at Kerner Library. Visit bit.ly/firetalk for more information.
CITR's annual fundraiser kicks off this February 26th at UBC's Pitt Pub. Is CITR your favorite radio station? Do you feel an intense desire to support its continuing mission to provide alternative programming that you literally will not hear anywhere else? Maybe you answered yes, or maybe you just like to get wild and listen to good music. Either way, this event promises to provide all that and more. Featuring Ace Martins, Atsy, Tits and Bread, Listening Party, and student DJs between bands. Admission is $5 or $3 for CITR members and club affiliates. All proceeds go towards CITR's 2015 fund drive, running from February 26th to March 6th. Of something to offer.
Up Wednesdays 3 to 4.
I mean, I just wanted to do a nice experimental music radio show and maybe throw in some.
I just feel when you're talking that anonymous, like private sense in your podcast.
I mean, I think I can talk, and that's good enough.
I like playing music sometimes for things that are not all right.
I just
radio essays and travesties, radio catechisms. Half-baked philosophy and criticism, experimental beat music, avant-garde, post-punk, industrial, noise, ad nauseum. Cue it up.
Wednesdays, 3 to 4 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
You have been listening to The Burrow on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. For those of you who jumped in the middle and were wondering what was going on, that was an interview that I did with Margaret Chartier, more well known as PharmaCon, this Saturday at the Fox Cabaret before her show that she played here, finishing up her tour. So I hope you all enjoyed that. If you missed it, the podcast will be up shortly, along with all of the old podcasts of this program and everything else that CITR as a station has to offer. Which brings me to what will be happening next week, actually starting this Thursday. Very, very important time here at CITR. It is our yearly fundraiser, otherwise known as Fund Drive. This year happening from Thursday, February 26th, until the next Thursday, which is March 5th, I believe, 2015. It starts with Dunkin' Donuts at noon this Thursday and will run until his show again the next week. So, everybody out there who has possibly donated in the past or maybe has thought about it, who appreciates what we do here as a station, not just the programs that we provide, but shows that we sponsor around town, support for local musicians and artists, and giving voice to communities that don't necessarily have it. You can go online starting now. It is open now to donate. Fill out a form and donate online, citr.ca/donate. And then starting Thursday at noon, call in 604-822-8648, if I remember correctly. And there will be people, volunteers, happily ready to take your calls, kindly chat with you, maybe some playful banter, and then get your donations. There are going to be great prizes. For my show specifically, it'll be next Monday, March 2nd, at 3 p.m., 3 p.m., 4 p.m. I will have some show-specific prizes. Not sure the prices I'm going to set for these prizes yet, but in general, it's going to be three different mix CDs that I'm making, the content of which, one of them will be a Vancouver comp of sorts, collecting tracks from all of the different artists and affiliated acts that have been guests on my show throughout the past 6 months or so. And then the other two, admittedly a bit silly, but as I'm making these CDs, it's a little bit of work. Not that difficult, but a little bit of work, so I decided to make it fun for myself. There are going to be two different versions of a compilation of The Fall. And if anyone has listened to my show before, you're probably aware that I'm a little bit obsessed with The Fall. So these two compilations are both going to be two discs. Because there's 35 tracks on one and 36 on the other. Completely unique compilations. So depending on which one you get, it will be completely different. If you want both of them, you'll get 71 tracks. And now there are Fall compilations out there for anyone who wants to get into the band that are through record labels and have been officially released. Simply put, these are actually better than those because it compiles everything. I choose one track from every studio album plus some extra singles and Peel sessions, things like that. Anyhow, that's what will be happening next week. So if you're interested in any of that, you can call in and donate to my show. But really, the important thing is to call in and donate to the station in general. Not that concerned whether or not it's specifically for myself. Anybody who does donate to my show, I will also make personalized cards. Not make the cards. The cards themselves I'll probably just get from here. But I will write personalized notes onto each card as a thank you to anyone who donates. The last prize I'll be giving away is will be at the highest price, but it'll be anyone who calls in to donate can make a playlist of songs to pretty much curate one of my shows. So you can, I'd probably say, make a list of 10 to 15 tracks, and we'll figure out a week that works, and I will play that during my show. And if you wanted to come on, you can come on and chat about them. But in general, I will play the music that you select for my show, and obviously I'll say who it's from, etc. So, that's happening this week. Fun Drive finale will be happening on March 6th at Pat's Pub, so get excited about that. Rock and Roll Lottery. You're going to be hearing a lot about Fun Drive over the next few days, so I'm going to go ahead and cut this short. Hopefully you'll tune in next week. Thank you for tuning in now. A Little Bit of Soul is on next. And in the background, I've had playing, and I'll, in order to fade out, continue playing Yellow Tears. If you're listening to the PharmaCon interview, she briefly mentioned Yellow Tears as an influence as she was growing up and getting into noise music in New York. This is something called the Piss Mop LP, and I'm just playing it through. So we will fade out with that. Again, thank you for listening. Fun Drive starting on Thursday. This has been The Burrow on CITR 101.9 FM.